The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Friday, everybody. The weekend is so close we can taste it. Oh, yeah. Hopefully have something fun on tap for the weekend. I don't really, because, you know, COVID, but I'm here. but, you know, it's a time to relax. I do most of my painting on the weekends, and I've got a few pet portraits in the works, but always time for more. And, you know, the holidays are approaching, so if you're looking for that perfect gift for that hard-to-please special someone on your holiday list, a pet portrait, what could be more perfect? You can either have it done for them or send a gift certificate. All of that works. If you're interested, just shout out. You know, give me send an email, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. Why is there something else playing on the Progressive Voices Network? This is weird. It's supposed to be us, not some 2-minute thing. I don't know what that is. Hold on one second. I'm going to see if I can't fix that real quickly. Because, you know, I am the master of the multitasker, don't you know? So while I try to get that fixed, let me tell you what we have on tap for today. As someone in the chat room just said, who's Brian Karen? It's not Brian Karen. It's Brian Karam. And you've seen him if you at all watched any of the White House press briefings, because he's usually there. Now, he used to be the guy who, is this working now? Hold on. He used to write for Playboy magazine, but you know, Playboy, I believe, is no longer, like, in any way, shape, or form. I heard that they stopped publishing the actual magazines a while ago, but now, so they were doing stuff online, and now they don't even do that. So I believe Brian Karam's last column for Playboy was the last original journalism they had. But we'll find out all of that from him. Brian Karam is the guy. Let me share this with you. This was 1 year ago yesterday. Brian Karam was in the White House briefing room when, the former guy himself was there taking questions. So let's see if I can find, do I have that shot anywhere? Hold on, maybe if I bring it down here. I'm okay, here we go. So this was 1 year ago yesterday, go figure. 1 year ago yesterday, this happened.
Win, lose, or draw in this election, will you commit here today for a peaceful transferal of power after the election? And there has been rioting in Louisville. There's been rioting in many cities across this country, red and your so-called red and blue states. Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transferal of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about
very strongly.
The ballots and the ballots are a
very
disaster.
Strongly.
And, I understand that, but people are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transferal of power?
We want to get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very we'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You
the
know
the ballots
it.
Are
and
out
you know
of control.
Who knows it better than anybody
You're
else?
You're out
the
of
Democrats
control.
Know it better than anybody else. Go ahead.
All right. So that again, that was 1 year ago yesterday. And my, how things have changed, huh? So as we speak, what's happening right now is in Arizona. Let's see if I can't bring this up for you. I don't really want to listen to it. But the Maricopa County election fraudit is presenting their findings.
The door,
I don't know who. I think these are the people who were the cyber ninjas, maybe. I don't know. I tried to watch some of it a little earlier, and frankly, it's almost unwatchable. But this is a little bit of what's going on there right now. I don't know who this guy is. Doug Logan. Maybe
so
he's
we
the
have
chief
a complete
ninja
signed record of every individual that came and picked up every box. So someone, you know, someone took over custody of that box, and we actually had individuals called runners, and they would run it from the ballot corral, and they'd take it over to whatever table they need to go to.
What?
And that individual would then sign the box over to the table manager
okay.
at the table.
Okay, so we're not going to spend any time on this because we knew it before. It was a fraudit, and we know it now. So what's really interesting is yesterday, a leak of the draft surfaced, right? And some of the news programs presented it as news. I happened to be watching Rachel Maddow last night, and she's like, you know, we've been burned so many times. So this is a leak, and it has its findings, but I'm not going to report them because, well, things can change. But it appears that nothing changed. So what we now know, and this is just too good to be true. Let me read the headline from Alternet. Trump abruptly deletes message praising, quote, highly respected Arizona, quote, auditors after they confirm Biden's win. So after, what, 6 months and $6 million, Arizonans, you paid for this. Are you so proud? The cyber ninjas, who had never done an election audit before, ever, they operate. It's one guy, I believe, who's from Florida, who operates out of a post office box and doesn't have any experience. How they found this guy, I don't know. Maybe that was the guy who was just talking. They found, not only did they find that there was, you know, that Biden won, but what they also found is this is just classic, that Donald Trump received 261 votes fewer than the official count by the Maricopa County Canvassing Board. That the official count was 995,665 votes. Well, this forensic fraudit found 995,404 votes. So that's a net loss of 261 votes. Meanwhile, they found an additional 99 votes for Joe Biden. So, but what's even funnier, and I think funny, haha, is that the former guy issued a statement last night. Now, he's suspended from all social media. So apparently what happens is he has a website of some sort, and then he sends out through his spokesperson, whoever that might be, statements, official statements on, you know, letterhead that says, I got to pull it up to read it for you. Statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States of America, as if that's a current title. No, the actual title is Failed Former Twice Impeached Guy, because I don't use the P word when it comes to him, unless it's the other P word. Anyway, so last night he issued a statement about, you know, let me just read what it says. Interesting that the Unselect Committee, I should do it in the Trump voice. Interesting that the Unselect Committee of Political Hacks dropped their subpoena request the night before Arizona is expected to announce its findings from the forensic audit on voter fraud in the 2020 presidential election scam. This is what they do. This is what they're good at. But everybody will be watching Arizona tomorrow to see what the highly respected auditors and Arizona State Senate found out about regarding the so-called election. So that was sent out in a statement last night at 11:07 p.m. And you'll notice the reference to the, quote, highly respected auditors. I guess Trump, you know, doesn't pay attention to real news, because if he had, by 11:07 last night, he would have seen the reports on the draft leaked final report from the fraudit that says Biden won. Hello, we've been telling you this for a while, but Joe Biden won. Go figure. So Yeah. So that happened, right? And let me go back to this article. So that statement has now been deleted from Trump's website. And I don't think he's said anything more about it. I'm waiting for his apology. Come on, Donald, apologize. So Alternet writes, the news that now President Joe Biden won Arizona was first reported on election night 2020 by the decision desk at Fox, which is hysterical, which Trump viewed as an act of betrayal by the right-wing cable outlet. I refuse to say news along with Fox, but that's me. Trump has spent almost 11 months insisting that he was the real winner in Arizona. And when Republicans in the Arizona state legislature ordered the cyber ninjas audit at taxpayer expense, he was certain that it would show he won Arizona. But in fact, the cyber ninjas hand recount showed more votes for Biden than the official government count in Maricopa County showed. It's just too classic. Anyway, that is the backdrop under which we hit the air today. Did I tell you who Brian Karam is? So Brian Karam, that reporter who was with Playboy, has been kind of a thorn in Trump's side all these, certainly for those 4 years. I want to know where Trump's new statement is. Because these were his highly respected auditors, right? Yeah, I think we're going to be waiting for a long time. All right, so today, I just called today the Friday news dump because in addition to the results of the fraud, which frankly, come on, you didn't expect, I didn't expect, because this was a fraud to begin with. I thought for sure, you know, they'd find what Trump wanted them to find because that's what they paid for, isn't it? Well, sometimes things don't go the way you want them to. But there's other news. So we'll talk with Brian Karam, I hope, about a lot of this when he joins in at the bottom of the hour. But for now, I fixed the phones. They are now working. So should you care to weigh in on anything that's going on in the world, feel free. Phone lines are open, 954-889-6410. Or you can Skype in to Nicole Sandler, all one word. In the meantime, let me tell you what else is happening. You know, just the news just kept coming, like one thing after another for like the last 24 hours. So first there was the leak of the draft of the Cyber Ninjas report, and they're still delivering their thing now. They're presenting their methods of ballots and tallying. Yeah, that's all right. Sorry, Cyber Ninjas, not interested. Like your outcome, but not interested because it was a fraud. The House today, let's start with what happened today and we'll work our way backwards a little bit. The House today passed legislation that would create a statutory right for healthcare professionals to provide abortions. This amid an intensifying legal battle over a new Texas law that's the most restrictive in the nation. Basically, what the House Democrats did is they codified Roe v. Wade. It passed. What was the vote was 218 to 211, almost along party lines, except for Henry Cuellar, a so-called Democrat from Texas. He's not. He's a Republican with a D next to his name, and he voted against it. He's the only person of either party who crossed party lines, who didn't vote with their party. Every Democrat other than Cuellar voted for this bill, the Women's Health Protection Act, and every Republican plus Cuellar voted against it. So now, and this would codify Roe v. Wade into law, guaranteeing a woman's right to abortion before the fetus is viable, usually around 22 to 24 weeks is how it the law reads. Right? Public polling shows a majority of Americans support the right to abortion in most instances. A Monmouth University poll showed that 62% of Americans say abortion should either always be legal or legal with some limitations. Those figures barely change. So why, you know, this abortion was always an issue that Republicans fundraised off of. But honestly, nobody who knew what was going on really ever thought that they would act on it, because it's one of those wedge issues that they use to raise money. So when now too many of their followers actually don't agree with this law, so this might backfire on them. And of course, you know, I live in Florida, and once again, you know, our guy, moron death sentence, is well, he didn't do it. The Republican led Florida legislature introduced similar legislation. I don't know what they're trying to do, but you know what? Keep driving people away. Maybe that's the ticket. Keep just alienating the few people who still identify as Republicans. The problem is, you know, the way they steal elections, that's what I worry about. I don't worry about Democrats getting more votes and winning in the future. I worry about the Republicans' dirty tricks stealing the election back. You know, what they accuse the Democrats of doing, because it's opposite world. All right. Well, I see our guest has joined us early, and I'm thrilled because Brian Karam can go through some of these news stories with me, because it is a big, big news dump day. Brian Karam, hey, welcome back to the show.
Pleasure to be back.
I like the shades.
Thank you.
Is that because the future is so bright?
I'm the Terminator. I'll be back.
Okay. Well, you are back. Now, I was taken by surprise this week when I saw that you are now writing a weekly column for Salon.com, and you are no longer the White House correspondent for Playboy magazine.
Well, that's because Playboy doesn't exist any longer.
in any form? Playboy's just gone.
No, it's strictly marketing now. It's online. It's quit publishing as far as... the hardcover stopped publishing about a year ago, went to four times a year, a quarterly, and now it's not at all.
Wow. Yeah. So I remember when that happened, they stopped publishing the hard copy, but I thought that was still online because weren't there articles? But you actually wrote the last original article for Playboy?
And the last original Playboy interview was with Anthony Scaramucci.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. You know, this is just a sign of the times. If you see me frantically looking around, it's because I'm looking for this binder that I believe I have in here somewhere, but I can't find. My father, you know, I grew up, I was born in New York. My father was in the advertising business. And when I was a little kid, he published Spanish language magazines. We're Jews from the East Coast, but you know he was from the Boston area. But he realized,
it's just like the way you said that.
Well, we're not Spanish. There's no Hispanic blood in my family tree. But my father realized back in the early 60s that this was a market, and so he started publishing these magazines. The first one was called Pimienta. And it was known as basically the Spanish Playboy. It was nudie magazines. And then he went on and he did the racier one, which was called Fiesta. And then he did Photo Novella. So my father was a smut peddler back in the day. That's what put me through college. And, the times have changed. I remember the few times we'd go to his office and I'd see the pictures on the covers on the wall of the office, and they were very scantily clad women. And I honestly never thought anything of it because it was always there. But those magazines don't exist anymore, really, do they?
No, you can get a lot more online.
Well, that's the thing.
Playboy ended up looking kind of quaint at the end of its publication run. The Girl Next Door. Sometimes you would look at the swimsuit edition of Sports Illustrated and it would look more like the old Playboy back in the 60s.
Right.
So if you can get everything you want for free online, as far as smut and pornography, then the girl with a staple in her navel who lives next door is not that big a deal to you.
Right. No. And even back, let's see, my dad passed away a long time ago, but it was in, it was in the late 90s when he started to get out of that business. In fact, well, he got busted because he lifted some pictures from Hustler and Larry Flynt sued him. So he shut down the magazines and he just moved on to, he bought the Spanish language rights to a lot of English classics and published them in Spanish and would sell them to schools and jails and globally. And that's what he morphed into that and realized, you know, I guess he was ahead of his time. Well, part of it, he was forced out of that business, but then he also realized that that was not going to be able to sustain itself. But Playboy, in addition to the pictures, did have good articles. I mean, it was always a joke. Oh, I read Playboy for the articles. But they had amazing interviews.
I always said that I was the excuse people gave for buying the magazine.
There but, you go. Yeah.
But it did. I mean, it had some of the, I mean, in one issue, I remember looking and there was, you know, I think it was Isaac Asimov and there was Kerouac and there was, you know, Alex Haley. And then there was, I mean, just the people that were in that magazine, everyone who ever wrote in the 20th century, and the, you know, 21st century even, who aspired to being writers, journalists, and literature, the best of the best wrote for Playboy. I mean, one of the first times I was made aware of the civil rights movement was reading the Alex Haley interview. It may have been Malcolm X or Martin Luther King in the 60s. And then, you know, I found out how big a racist John Wayne was by reading the Playboy interview in 1970. You know, I still watch some of his movies, but I sure wouldn't invite that guy over to the house for a picnic. But, you know, Playboy actually did open up my world as a kid. You know, I first looked at it because, you know, I remember writing and saying, wow, girls are neat. And then I stayed to read the articles and it opened my mind and to things that I had never considered, things that I had never seen, and made me look at the world in a different way. I mean, I found out about Hunter Thompson, not through my father or my uncle who grew up with him, or my great uncle who represented him as a lawyer.
Really?
I found about Hunter Thompson reading the pages of Playboy. And then I didn't know he was from Louisville. I started reading, you know, his stuff they did. And the Kentucky Derby is decadent and depraved in Scanlon magazine. And as I started reading this stuff, it just blew my mind that, you know, there were people in the town where I grew up whose minds were far, far exceeded what I could see walking the streets of Louisville. And so it really, in many ways, was just an eye opener. And I think that we miss something today by not having that literary element in our pornography.
Right. To give you something to make it legitimate. I got to, you know, another little anecdote is my husband and I have been married now for 5 years, but we've lived together for about 10. And when we moved in here, my daughter and I.
Newlyweds.
Yeah. Well, we are. Fair, kind of. Well, when we moved in here, my daughter was, I want to say 11 or 12, right? When we moved in mm-hmm. with my husband in his house. And he had a Playboy subscription. And again, we're from a different generation. I never thought anything of it. It was just there. And again, I grew up with these things. So I just never thought much about it. But my daughter one day came to me and she's like, Mom, why does he have that magazine in there? She was so offended that he canceled his Playboy subscription because here's a young, you know, tween girl just mortified by the fact that there are these magazines with these mostly naked women in it. And so he reluctantly gave up his Playboy subscription. And now, look, it is no longer. So
it's
the times
no longer around. I mean, the whole outlook, I remember, and to some extent, I do understand, you know, those who feel like Playboy was exploitive because I guess, you know, it used naked women to bring you into the pages. But I interviewed many bunnies, Playboy bunnies and models, you know, who posed naked for the magazine over the years. And what we don't realize is how enthralling, enlightening and freedom. And it gave women a sense to be free, that they thought they were free to express themselves in ways, men were often able to do, but they were not. So you have to see that one from both sides.
Well, and now they have OnlyFans. So if they really want to do it, they can cut out the middleman.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
And they do.
And they do. Apparently they do. Even though they tried to, you know, to stop that, you know, mm-hmm. OnlyFans for about a minute said, no more sex stuff. And people went, but then why do you exist?
Why are we tuning in?
And then they said, never mind. Never mind. Never mind.
Which is kind of what Playboy did. I mean, they went without the nudes for a while and tried to be a maxim. And then they said, "Well, never mind."
Yeah. Huh. So now Hugh Hefner's daughter took over the enterprise. So mm-hmm. she's the one who shut it down?
No, she left years ago.
Oh, really?
And then it was towards the end, while it was still in the Hefner family, Cooper Hefner, the youngest son, ran it for a while. And then after Hugh Hefner passed, it was sold to a corporation, and that corporation valued the marketing ability of Playboy and the brand, as they call it, you know, the Playboy bunny brand.
The ears, right? The
ears and the rap, but the editorial content, not so much. So that ceased to exist.
Wow. So when was your last column there?
Oh, God, I don't remember now. After the columns ended in April or May, I did a couple of other pieces for them. But mostly it was on I took over their Twitter account and stuff showing Playboy readers or viewers what the White House was like. And then that ended. And then the last piece that I wrote was after it ended. And I posted that as being I was pretty much the last man standing at Playboy.
Wow. Wow. Well, you're going to go down in history.
That, I don't know about that but
for that and for asking Donald Trump a year ago yesterday, will you commit to a peaceful transfer of power, win, lose, or draw, no matter what happens to the election? I played the clip at the top of the show to, you know, when I said you were coming on. And you know, the rest, as they say, is history.
That is history. And, you know, he made the history. I just asked the question. And there are those who, you know, it's interesting to me because there was, I read a literary criticism from a professor who said the question shouldn't have been asked because it opened up the question to something that should have, that until then had been open and shut, which is really kind of putting it bass ackwards. Mm-hmm. The reason why I asked the question is the logical fallacy in that professor's logical, you know, dissection of that question, his logical fallacy was that Donald Trump hadn't already run roughshod over mores and that we all took for granted. And we all did take for granted that question. No, I would never have thought of asking that question of any other president, but it was Trump's actions which led to the question, and it had to be asked and it had to be answered. And his answer was frightening. It was scandalous. It was horrifying. And we've been living in that question and answer for the last year. I mean, all that followed after the insurrection, the big lie, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Boebert, all those people.
Right.
And all of that is a byproduct of his selling of that garbage in the press room on that day. In essence, telling people that even if the voters speak, that you don't have to listen,
right?
That it's all about wrestling and wrenching power from people for your own, you know, good. And that's what's frightening to me is, look, you can criticize, and I do criticize Biden, and I've criticized every president for things that they do, or I've asked pointed questions about what they do. But I never doubt that Joe Biden has respects the Constitution. I never doubt that Joe Biden has everyone's best interests at heart, not just his own. Now, you can call me a flaming liberal, and I've been called that. And you can call me a flaming retarded Republican, and I've been called that. And you can call me anything you want, just don't call me late for lunch. But the fact is, that question had to be asked. It had to be answered. And I don't regret asking it for a second. And in fact, I think it should have been followed up on and asked more often, because there's no doubt in my mind that of all the presidents I've ever covered, only Donald Trump cares about himself above everyone else.
Everything.
You don't see it in that answer to that question. You are in desperate need of help.
Really? Well, you know, that, and that's where the contrast is greatest. When you see Joe Biden up there talking about whatever it might be, any subject, the fact that he's talking about what's happening, how he either wants to fix it or how, you know, it was messed up or whatever, he's talking about that and not about himself. He's not saying, I'm the greatest. I did this. You know, right. That alone is just like a breath of fresh air. Whether you like him or not, I would hope people see the big difference there.
Some people don't. Many people don't.
I know.
And the real thing about that is when you look at it, it is real as this gets. If when Biden talks about trying to bring people together, you see him trying to flex bipartisan muscles that have atrophied since the Newt Gingrich era. Uh-huh. And he's trying to, just over a simple matter of getting an infrastructure bill passed. I mean, I got promised that crap every week for 4 years with Donald Trump.
That's right.
You know, it's infrastructure week here at the White House. We're not going to do anything, but we're going to say the word infrastructure.
That's
infrastructure,
right.
Infrastructure. And then, you know, they digress into whatever BS Donald Trump wanted to talk about. But the fact of the matter is, in this case, this guy is trying to get a bipartisan bill passed. And if you can't respect everyone working together and rowing in one direction, no matter what we think of, you know, That's if you can't talk about teamwork, if all you're going to talk about is your little tiny tribe of the world, you desperately need help.
No kidding. All right. So we had some latecomers, some people, you know, come into the chat room. It happens. You know, sometimes people are not right on time. So someone just said, what was the question? All right. So let me share it again for those who didn't hear it the first time, because, you know, it bears repeating. So here we go. This was from 1 year ago yesterday. In the White House briefing room, and you'll recognize this guy. Oops. Oh, hold on. I've got the fraud it thing going on. So let me move that away. now I lost my, oh, here we go. Okay. Now I lost my video. There we go. All right. So here we go.
Win, lose, or draw in this election, will you commit here today for a peaceful transferal of power after the election? And there has been rioting in Louisville. There's been rioting in many cities across this country, red and your so-called red and blue states. Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transferal of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
I understand that, but people are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transferal of power?
We want to have, get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very
ballots?
A very peaceful, there won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You know it. And you know who knows it better than anybody else?
No, I don't know it. And I didn't know it then, and I said so.
Go ahead.
All right. And then he cuts you off and moves on to the next person. No, and that's the thing, you didn't know. And he did that all the time. You know it. They know. No, we don't know it.
No, I don't know it. That's, I did that to him, and it would hack him off. I got to tell you, that day, it was so happenstance how everything happened. You have to remember that was during COVID.
Yeah, so you saw the masks, right?
Yeah, and so we were limited to 14 reporters in that room on a daily basis. Or we volunteered to limit ourselves.
Because they didn't do it, right.
The administration didn't do it. And they routinely ignored that and that mandate and would up bring in like two or three of their friends, you know, friendly, like OAN, Epoch Times, and some of these other people. And they would stand at the back of the room, though they couldn't get a seat, and they would call on them. Kayleigh McEnany would call them. The president would call on them. So even though I wasn't in the pool, I would show up just to counter-program them, because I felt like if they're going to, you know, get a, if the White House is going to ignore the mandate, look, I'm masked up, I vaxxed up, I socially distanced, and unless I was at the White House, my wife and I were caring for the dogs and playing, puttering around in our garden. So I knew I wasn't going to, you know, and I tested every day.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So I showed up, and on that particular day, there was an empty seat in the back. And rather than have OAN or the Epoch Times take it, I took it. I figured that was better, that there should be someone who's going to ask a real question.
Right.
Take it. I had no inkling that he would call on me. I suspected that he wouldn't.
Right, because you've had dust-ups with him before.
Many. And I had sued him three times to keep my press pass.
Right.
I had gotten in, you know, you told me to sit down in one time. I wouldn't do it. Call me an activist, that Playboy guy, you know, a few times. And so there I was sitting there, and I raised my hand, and damned if he didn't call on me first. And I remember saying to myself, I said, all right, here we go, saddle up.
Uh-huh.
So I knew the question that had to be asked. The Atlantic had done a piece on it. They had called it like fear porn journalism or something. But it was a legitimate question. At that point in time, with everything the president had said and all the conjecture about him, what he would do and how he was trying to muddy the waters of the election, it had to be asked. I thought, Nicole, I swear to you, when I asked that question, I thought it was going to be, what are you, an idiot? Of course I'm going to respect it.
Right.
Every president respects it. I honestly thought that that would be the and we would put a great deal of this discomfort to rest if he but had said that. But what he said was scared the living crap out of everyone. And that played in the press for at least a week.
Sure.
If not more, all the way through the end of the election. And the insurrection, and it's been replayed many times. And everything that we saw after the election, including the insurrection, including dead cops, including a dead rioter, including everything that we've seen, all can trace its roots to that statement. Had he just said, yes, of course, I respect a peaceful transfer of power, every president respects it, then we wouldn't be sitting here talking about this today. Somebody might be going, Brian, you're an idiot for asking that question. But
no, it was the question that needed to be asked at that moment. And it informed us really throughout the rest of his term and what transpired afterwards to that point of today love this. Last night, the news breaks that this leaked draft document of the fraudit report is out, and it finds, go figure, Joe Biden not only won, but by more votes than the official count in Maricopa County.
I saw somebody tweeted out that, that, you know, once again, Trump loses in Arizona. You know, he's lost so many times. He might as well be playing UCLA.
Sorry,
there you go.
Got that handy for you now. But last night he tweets out, not paying attention to real news, apparently, that the highly respected auditors are going to release their report tomorrow, and that's why the Democrats issued those subpoenas today to deflect from the report that's going to come and vindicate me tomorrow. And that was sent out after 11 o'clock last night. Of course, today it's taken down. And I can only imagine the kind of tantrum he's having. I'm just waiting for him to burst a blood vessel and leave us alone.
There were many days I thought he would. There were honestly times when I would ask him a question. I thought, man, at any moment, he's just going to explode. That's literally poof. And, you know, that was the one day out in the Rose Garden when I asked him about numbers on the illegal immigration. And he told me to sit down, and he threatened to walk off and not answer my question. And I could explain that to the other reporters. And I kept asking him, and he didn't walk off, and I didn't stop, and he didn't answer.
Now, was that the day that Sebastian Gorka got in your face?
That was a different day. That was after that. That was a day when he invited all of his so-called media friends, new media friends, bloggers and podcasters. And, you know, I guess Gorka was looking for that one, because what was funny is he walked off, and I said, Mr. President, could you stay and answer a few questions from the press? And somebody, I don't know who it was, turned around and said, he's already answered the questions from the real press. And I said, kind of in a Rodney voice, I said, here's a group that's eager for demonic possession. And Gorka came over and started a row there. And I invited him outside to have a talk, and he went nuts, and I told him to get a job. And somebody asked me about a week or 10 days later, after he showed up on Fox News hawking fish oil, what did I have to say about it? And I said, well, I told him to get a job. I guess he took my advice.
Now, was that when Trump, they tried to pull your press credentials?
Yeah, that was Stephanie Grisham. She never held a press conference, never held a briefing, but the only thing she did while she was press secretary was try to yanked my credentials, and they lost three times in court. They were one of the funniest defenses for pulling my press credentials was the argument that if they didn't have the ability to sanction me, that the next thing you know, there'd be reporters mooning them, mooning the president. And the judge came back and said, there's nothing to stop you from throwing out rogue mooning reporters.
Wow. Now, Brian Karam, you said that you were not one of the pool reporters, but you were regularly in the press room. You do have a hard White House press pass.
Yeah, I'm there still regularly. Well, I've been on vacation for a few weeks, but I'm regularly there. And I do have a hard pass, but we had limited ourselves to the pool reporters and only 14 of them. And we still have that problem in the East Room. And that's one of my arguments against Biden is that he has not yet opened that up to the full press, and he probably should.
Wow. Yeah, he should. But again, COVID is still a problem because of people who refuse to get vaccinated.
There are 100 of us in the White House press briefing room these days. We're not limited there anymore.
Huh. Oh, that's interesting.
But in the East Room, which is the largest room in the White House, there are only 14 or 15 or maybe 20 that are allowed in. And there's no rhyme or reason as to who they let in. So they should, if you're going to open up the briefing room at that point in time, you should open up the East Room as well.
There's no logical reason. So are your White House press pass, the hard pass you have that you won back in court when they tried to take it from
you?
But is that issue to you personally? It's not to Playboy. It's to you.
No, it's mine. And when you switch organizations, they'll switch, the accreditation on it to someone else.
I see. So you're now writing a weekly column for Salon.com along with my friend Digby, who's over there too.
And also the Washington Diplomat, a small diplomatic magazine. So I write a column for them weekly as well.
Okay. Now you were for a little while, at least writing for the Bulwark. Are you not doing that anymore?
Yeah, no, just those two. I think those are, two's enough, man.
Yeah. And that's, you're better suited for Salon because I don't really go over to the Bulwark. So I'll read you at salon.com.
Yeah.
So
it's a better fit for me. Yes.
I think so too. So Brian Karam is with us now. And you also host your own podcast. Just Ask the Question.
That's true. I will just ask the question. Yeah. JustAskTheQuestion.com, and it's a lot of fun where I just basically the idea there is to have an extended conversation and put issues in context and ask the questions that, other people may not be willing to ask, but I will. And it's a lot of fun. And we've had some really good sports, including Michael Cohen, who answered everything I asked him.
Really?
Yeah. So, I've had Anthony Scarmucci on there and Cohen and the whole, but Eric Swalwell and Norm Eisen and some really, it's good to have some good, a different mix. And I like talking to people and putting things in context. And so the big problem is on a lot of these shows that are on the, like CNN, MSNBC, Fox, whatever, you get 15 seconds.
I know.
And it's just, you're not left at the end of the show with anything that you didn't have at the beginning of the show. You haven't solved a problem. You haven't really discussed a problem. It's just a bunch of people yelling at each other. And then at the end, okay, we got to move on.
Right. Well, and in the 10-minute segment, they have three people on. So each person gets about 90 seconds, if that.
Yeah. If that. And so it's nice to sit down for 45 minutes and talk to someone about a real issue and ask questions that, all right, so why do you think that? And, one of those things that I've done, what I've been able to do is when I sit down, I apply that to people that I'm interviewing, particularly about the COVID-19 pandemic. And you sit there and you talk to people and you go, hey, all right, so why do you not believe in a vaccine? And then, you can't trust these scientists. Okay, but let me follow that up. You have already said that you'll take a horse dewormer.
Right.
Yes. Well, scientists develop the horse dewormer for horses.
To deworm horses. Yes.
And scientists develop the vaccine for humans. Mm-hmm. So do you not trust science developing stuff for people, but you trust it developing stuff for horses. And you'll be amazed the number of times I've asked that question and then just get enough dead air to fill in maybe 5 or 6 good Cheerios commercials. I mean, that's right. They just go blank. And then I actually had, you know, there was a kid I was talking to, I'd coached in football many years ago. And he said, you know, I don't trust this, that, blah, blah, blah. I said, listen, pal, I coached you. I'm in the briefings and I still am in those briefings. Was in one today with Anthony Fauci and the CDC and they're talking about, I said, I'm in these briefings. The vaccine is safe. Take it. And it takes sometimes someone who they know personally to say it's okay for them to do it. And I have just been amazed at how, I got to tell you, after a year and a half of this, it's amazing to me how damn militantly ignorant millions of people are. And no offense to you militantly ignorant people, but wake up.
Really? Really?
Take the damn vaccine.
You know, the whole, I'm doing my own research. Really?
Yeah, I love
what
that.
Research you're going to come up with that the scientists who've worked in this field their entire lives, like Fauci, who's worked for 8 presidents or something insane like that. Come on.
He has an axe to grind. I'm doing my own research. I go, you're looking on YouTube. Isn't doing
right.
I said, you know, and I've asked this that way. I've said, listen, would you accept it if you were, you know, having a surgery, like heart surgery. If I walked in to the surgical theater and said, I know, Mr. Heart Surgeon, that you've studied for 25 years before you've gotten to this point, but I saw a video on YouTube. You're doing it wrong. Right. Would you accept that? Well, hell no, that's stupid. Well, I go, well, now you understand why you are. And it's sometimes people just get their back up and don't want to be told they're stupid. So if you ask a question in a non-confrontational manner, and if you just explore issues, trying to find an answer, sometimes you'll be pleasantly surprised at what you get. And other times you just, you know, you start laughing your, you know, what's off.
Right. Right. You know, I've always often said, I would love to have a good, honest, in-depth debate conversation with a real conservative or Republican. The problem is there have to be ground rules. You have to stipulate to the facts, like the sky is blue and the grass is green.
There has to be an agreement to start out with before you can debate.
Yes.
And then there has to be rules of logic. I mean, no post hoc, ergo propter hoc. It's just because something followed something doesn't mean that it caused something.
Exactly.
And if you stick to the rules of legitimate rules of debate, you know, logical fallacies, you call out for logical fallacies. If you have a set of, you know, like in debate in college and high schools, here's the givens. We agree to this. Here's where we're debating. You can do that, but not many people want to do that today. And they engage in ad hominem attacks. Why do you think that? You're fucking stupid, man. Well, okay. I can't argue that. That's, you know, that's going to be your thought. And, but let's stick to the facts.
Right.
For example, there are some givens, you know, the Holocaust occurred.
Yes, it did.
Man landed on the moon. The vaccine works. The sun rises in the east, sets in the west. The globe is round, and we circle the sun.
Yes. So, hello. Right? Yeah. Sky blue, grass green. So, you know, go figure. I remember.
Water wet.
I've been doing this for long enough that I was on the air back when Joe Walsh, not the guitar player, but the former congressman, was in Congress, came in on the Tea Party bandwagon back in 2010, and he was the worst of the worst. He was the Marjorie Taylor Greene of his era. Not anymore. Right. So I see him on Twitter, and we struck up a conversation. I invited him on the show, and it was nice to hear him admit that he was wrong, apologize for calling Obama a Muslim. I mean, we there was common ground there. But then I wanted I wanted to ask him about his stance. So, for instance, you know, Medicare for all. Well, no. A living wage. Does everybody deserve a living wage? No. I asked him about if he knows anything about modern monetary theory and suggested he read Stephanie Kelton's book, The Deficit Myth. And he's just so close-minded. He doesn't want to know from it. No, people don't deserve a living wage. Not everybody, healthcare should not be a human right. I mean, I just find him, he was so close-minded. Again, he's apologizing for the attitude he took, but he still is not open-minded enough to understand how we're trying to make lives better for Americans.
Just I think you must have had him on your show before I had him on mine, because I got him to at least admit that a living wage is something, and that health care for all is something we should pursue.
Really? Because he didn't when he was here.
Yeah, he would. But it's how we pay for it. Where it breaks down with many true conservatives is, how do we pay for it? And I go, and here's one of my questions. For example, let's go back to our occupation in Afghanistan.
Okay.
20 years, what was it? $325 million a day for 20 years.
Yeah.
And everyone's giving, you know, Biden grief. And here's where I give him grief. I give him grief on not having, on having poor intelligence on how quickly the Taliban would take over the country.
Yes.
But other than that, he managed to do something that was unprecedented in the history of mankind. And that was evacuate the equivalent of the city of Fort Lauderdale in less than a month from a war-torn country. Now, you take that, what he did, and then you ask, there are veterans who are upset, said, well, what does this say us getting out of here? It makes us feel like our job was in vain. And I say, it was. It was a poor decision to
That's
go in there. And he got us out. So he's actually honoring those veterans more than the previous three presidents who kept getting people killed. Now, let's go to the money. At $325 million a day, what if we had spent that on infrastructure, schools, roads, and spent with what shape would Afghanistan be in today? Would the Taliban have a foothold if everybody, if the kids were, if the moms worried about getting their kids to soccer practice and getting, you know, they're making sure they're to the dentist and the orthodontist to get their braces on? No, there would be no chance that the Taliban would have a foothold. So I asked Walsh, I said, so what if we spent money? There is money to be spent. It's how you allocate the money that we have. It's not that you're asking us to spend more.
Right.
It's that we're asking to spend differently.
That's right.
And if we spent differently, would the benefit, you know, the cost ratio analysis, would we get a better benefit out of it than if we simply went in and bombed people, killed them, and poured money into the, you know, military industrial complex, which is, look, that's what we're doing. And you can look at what we said, what we did with China in regards to Australia and, and
the submarines,
Britain,
right?
That new pact is also helping out the military industrial complex, because they're going to have to build these submarines for Australia. So there's money.
Right.
But where is the money being invested in people instead of death? And that's where I take umbrage with real conservatives, is I don't think they think through soundly enough how we spend money.
You're
it's
right.
Not that we're asking you to spend more. I just want you to spend differently, because I firmly believe that if you spent the money differently, the risk in the world would lower. What is the
100%.
Most? What do we export out of this country?
Weapons.
Our military.
Yeah.
But what is it that people like about this country? It's our culture. It's the benefits. It's the tradition of transfer of power. It's, you know, the tradition of, you know, the citadel on the hill. That stuff is what people like about us. They don't like our military too much.
No.
And you can't blame them.
And to show you how little has changed, yesterday, the House passes the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. The vote's 316 to 113. So a lot of Democrats voted for this.
Yeah.
They allocated $740 billion for defense. I do air quotes with defense, because it's not defense. We're not defending ourselves with that. We're on the offense. And that's $24 billion more than Biden asked for. And and it's more than double in 1 year what the big $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill is asking for, that would do so much good for us. That's less than half of what Congress allocated for a year to the military.
Yeah, and look, I'm not disparaging the military. We do need to defend ourselves.
Yeah, but not to that extent.
To your point, what's the figure? We spend more than the next 10 20. Nations come.
At one point, it was 20
combined.
Yep.
And I think what 16 of them are our allies. So we got the defense part down, pal.
Yep.
we're defending ourselves just fine.
That's right.
What we need to do is spend it more, spend it smarter, and spend more on infrastructure and more on, you know, it's one of the things from the Kennedy era that I remember was the Peace Corps. How much goodwill did that sow?
Right. A lot.
You know, and the goodwill of when we have the vaccines, exporting those around the world, smart. Giving it away free, smart.
Yep.
Because that's goodwill. We have to start thinking of that. And, you know, when people go, well, that just means we're being soft. No, it means we're being human.
That's right.
It means we're being helpful.
And we're taking on the role of a world leader in the way that helps the world rather than is militarizing the world.
Or threatening the world.
Brian Karaman, the couple of minutes we have left, we are waiting. Monday is the day that the deal that was cut with the House. They're not centrists and they're not moderates. They're conservatives. They're the conservative Dems, is how I put it. Somebody else the other day called them obstructionists. But it's like fingernails on a blackboard when I hear them called moderates. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are not moderate about anything.
I don't even think they're Democrats.
No, I don't either.
Just me. But
but so the House is going to get to vote on the BIF, as they called it, the first smaller infrastructure, hard infrastructure bill. Progressives are saying, wait a minute, we had a deal. They go together. So we each have some leverage over the other faction of this so-called Democratic Party. So Nancy Pelosi is now saying, well, we're going to have something on a reconciliation package that they can vote on Monday. What do you think is going to happen?
I have no idea. And I'll tell you why. I don't think they know.
No, I don't think they know either.
And I think at the end of the day, it's going to go through reconciliation, and it's going to look a lot like summer sausage or head cheese. And I don't know whose head's going to be in it, but there's going to be a lot of cheese made from it. It's disparaging, but the Democrats, you know, I know that people go, you know, Democrats in name only, dinos and rhinos. Whatever you want to say about that. But the thing that the Democrats do that I like, and look, there's a lot that I don't like in both parties.
Me too.
But the thing that the Democrats do that I like is try to get everyone, no matter what they think, getting them involved in the decision-making process. But to your point, you can't leave out the progressives just because you don't like what they have to say. And that this will be the tail of the tape for whether or not the Democrats. And sadly, look, the Republicans presented a very low bar for the Democrats to stumble over in the 2020 election. And they managed to stumble over it.
Just barely.
It would be really nice if they aimed just a little higher.
Thanks.
So you know, just a bit. But I say that about the press, too. And by the way, I will put that peg in. I'll ask you to pick up a copy of Free the Press, which is out this fall. And
your forthcoming book. Yes.
Yes. So I'll plug that thing,
please,
because I address this issue and also address the problems of Republicans and Democrats and working together. And it does bother me that the Democratic Party seems to be sliding backwards a bit. And I know they're trying. Look, you have to reach out to Republicans. You may not like them, but you're going to have to learn to communicate with them. But that doesn't mean that you slide back to what they want to get stuff passed, because then you're no better than they are.
Right. But we need Republicans who are like they used to be. I never thought I'd long for the old days of the Republican Party, but even the new Gingrich days.
How far back do you want to go, though? I mean, are we talking about, I mean, the latest that I can think of where there was a Republican that was remotely committed to reality, you'd have to go back to Eisenhower. I mean, Richard Nixon was the beginning of everything with his Southern strategy and his appealing to racism.
And then Reagan.
Reagan said, well, and I touch upon this in the book. Look, everything bad that's happened to the press began with Nixon, Roger Ailes, and Ronald Reagan turned it in Murdoch.
Right.
Made it reality. And every president since then has dismantled the First Amendment and squashed free speech And it's the Republicans and, you know, honestly, some of the Democrats. But it began with Nixon. And I can't think of a – I mean, if you're going to go back to the Republicans when I liked them, please go back to Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah. You know, right. In a former life, I remember the Republicans were okay. Actually, before, you know, in the age of Lincoln.
They were the progressives.
They were. They were the ones
that – You know, the Democrats were the racists, the Republicans That's were right. the progressives, and now it's flipped. And I like when the Republicans go, well, the Democrats were for Jim Crow. I go, well, those Democrats are not these Democrats.
Right. Those are the Republicans today.
The Republicans gave us Abraham Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt. Yeah. And you haven't done crap since then.
That's right. And then you became what the Democrats used to be, and the Democrats yeah. became what the Republicans used to be. Well, when the book comes out, is there a release date on it?
Free the Press coming out this fall to find bookstores wherever books are sold.
Okay, well, when it does, you have to come back. I'd love to read the book
sure.
and then
well,
have you back
I'll
on.
I'll send you an advanced copy of it so you
Please
can
do.
Take a look at it. I've got one sitting on my desk right now.
Awesome.
I'll be happy to send it to you.
Okay, sounds good. I'll send you my address. Brian Karam, people can find you, of course, on the Twitters at Brian Karam. And the website for Just Ask the Question is justaskthequestion.com.
Correct.
And the book, well, we'll tell you when the book comes out.
You can go to Amazon and Google Free the Press or anywhere where fine books are sold. And, of course, I always put in a plug for independent booksellers who are struggling hard against Amazon.
You know what? So Bookshop.org.
Yeah, or Salon.com.
Or Salon.com. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can go to Salon.com. And at the end of my column right there, you can click on it and buy the book.
There
so
you go.
I say vote early, vote often, buy early, buy often.
Will do. Brian Karam, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. It's
Thanks.
A great way
always
to end the week.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. All right. Mm-hmm. I'll talk to you soon, and I look forward to the book. All right. Take care. And with that, we're done. That's it. That's a week for us. So I'll leave you with the news, and I'll see you Monday. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until then, be safe.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Here come the subpoenas. The Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection is issuing subpoenas to four current and former top aides to Trump, his final White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, former White House Chief Strategist, Steve Bannon, Trump's longtime social media chief, Dan Scavino, and former Pentagon official and House Intel aide, Kash Patel. There's a deadline of October 7th for those four to give the committee the documents they've requested. Bannon and Patel are scheduled to sit for depositions on October 14th. Meadows and Scavino are scheduled for the 15th. So what happens if they ignore these subpoenas like they all did while the former guy was in office? Adam Schiff, who sits on the committee, explained.
Unlike the last 4 years, these witnesses are not going to be able to count on the former president to protect them if they essentially thwart the law. And I would hope that we can move expeditiously to enforce the subpoenas if that's necessary. I hope it won't be, but if it is, but also that the Justice Department will be open to considering potential criminal contempt charges against anyone who ignores the law.
More breaking news as we head into the weekend. The so-called audit of Arizona's Maricopa County's 2020 presidential election by something called Cyber Ninjas has completed its work. The final report is due to be released Friday afternoon, but a draft copy was making the rounds on Thursday, and it confirms that President Joe Biden won the election, defeating the former guy by about 45,000 votes. That's an actual increase over his official margin of victory. You'd think that would be the end of it. Right? But no. These ridiculous and dangerous games that the Republicans are playing with our election systems and process isn't over. Trump cajoled or threatened Texas Governor Greg Abbott to conduct a similar audit, even though Trump won in that state. Abbott, proving that he answers not to his constituents but to the failed, twice impeached former president, confirmed a new audit of the election in four Texas counties just hours after the former guy told him to do it. And to continue this thread of absurdity, there's this. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley tweeted very early Friday morning, quote, "It's 4 a.m. in Iowa, so I'm running. I do that 6 days a week. Before I start the day, I want you to know that Barbara and I have decided I'm running for re-election. A lot more to do for Iowa." We ask and will work for your support. Will you join us? Hashtag Grassley runs. Hashtag Grassley works. I'd say hashtag Grassley will be 89 years old on election day. Time for him to go home. Retire. Seriously, the only sitting senator older than Grassley is Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat who's up for re-election in 2024. And she actually filed the paperwork to seek re-election back in January of this year. Well, at least they're both eligible for boosters. Yes, an interesting development regarding the COVID-19 booster vaccinations. After the CDC advisors voted on Thursday to recommend Pfizer booster shots only for older people, nursing home residents, and those with underlying health conditions, the director of the CDC, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, early Friday morning, overruled them and added workers in high exposure jobs to the list. And that makes sense. So teachers and others who are exposed daily to potentially infected people can get the booster shot. A White House booster shot plan could come as soon as Friday afternoon. Moving on to Congress. On Thursday evening, the House passed the National Defense Authorization Act. The vote was 316 to 113. In addition to setting spending levels and Pentagon policy, it would also require that women register for the Selective Service and reform the military justice system to move cases of sexual assault and harassment outside of the chain of command to an Office of Special Prosecutors. That's a good thing. It'll also launch an investigation into the withdrawal from Afghanistan and review the entirety of the 20-year war. The cost of the bill? $740 billion in 1 year. That would add about $24 billion more to the Pentagon's budget than Mr. Biden requested. And $740 billion in 1 year? That's more than double the amount of the massive $350 billion per year over 10 years reconciliation package. That would actually improve life for American citizens instead of furthering war globally. Priorities, people. The House also approved amendments to the bill that would require the Biden administration to prohibit U.S. military support for the Saudi-led coalition's war against the Houthis in Yemen. And another provision that was stripped out of the bill and put up as a standalone was overwhelmingly approved. $1 billion in new funding for Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system. This after an ugly debate over Israel's actions towards Palestinians. The vote on that standalone provision was 420 to 9. Now, the Senate is set to vote on Monday on a motion to advance a temporary government funding bill. It was passed by the House on Wednesday and includes a suspension of the debt ceiling. Republicans are still planning to block the bill because Mitch McConnell is an obstructionist who's putting politics ahead of country and the full faith and credit of the United States. If they do and the bill fails, Democrats will have to figure out how to address the shutdown looming at the end of the month. They could remove the debt ceiling provision from the bill and then pass it with Republican support and deal with the debt ceiling separately, or they could just let the government go unfunded and blame their colleagues for the shutdown. Remember, government funding runs out at midnight on September 30th. Regarding the debt ceiling, the government will reportedly reach its borrowing limit in mid-October, which would then trigger a first-ever U.S. default. Stay tuned. Germany heads to the polls for a historic general election on Sunday. Voters will decide who will succeed longtime Chancellor Angela Merkel. She's been in charge there since 2005 and announced in 2018 that she wouldn't seek re-election after this term. Once a successor is clear, she'll step down. That could take days or even weeks. Merkel's center-right Christian Democratic Union and the left-leaning Social Democratic Party dominate German politics. But anything is possible. And finally, if it were up to me, I'd take away the guns. At least one person was killed and 14 others injured in a shooting Thursday at a Kroger supermarket in Collierville, Tennessee, near Memphis. The shooter was also dead of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. 2021 is turning out to be the worst year for U.S. gun violence in decades. surpassing even last year's unusually high numbers. A total of 14,516 people died from gun violence in the U.S. from January 1st to September 15th. That marks a 9% increase over last year, according to the Gun Violence Archive. There have been 498 mass shootings during that period. That's a 15% increase over last year. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on the donate button.